I'm sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. No short.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. April 19th, 2017, marks the 22nd anniversary of the Oklahoma City bombing of the Murrow Building. The show you're about to hear was originally recorded and aired in April of 2015 on the 20th anniversary. So when you hear those references to the 20th anniversary, please know that we're now at the 22nd anniversary. So let's begin. April 19th marked the 20th anniversary of the Oklahoma City bombing of the Alfred P. Murrow Building in 1995, which killed 168 people, including 19 children. Timothy McVeigh was accused of the crime and was allegedly executed in June of 2001, just months before 9/11. His bomb-making accomplice, Terry McNichols, is serving a life sentence without parole. On today's show, we'll look at some of the evidence that challenges the official story of what happened in Oklahoma City that day. I'm sure you'll see similarities to 9/11. And like 9/11, there are mountains of evidence showing that we've been lied to and that there's a cover-up going on. Now, if you're one of those people who thinks I'm a crazy conspiracy theorist, I ask you to investigate Oklahoma City and 9/11 for yourself before you condemn me. I believed the official story of Oklahoma City until roughly 2009, and I really didn't want to believe the new evidence that I was getting. And my first thought was, oh my God, not Oklahoma City too. But I did some research and watched the video, A Noble Lie, and I had to accept the facts before me, and they didn't support the official story. We showed the film A Noble Lie a few years ago at the University of Hartford. But if you didn't get to see it, it's now posted on YouTube, so you can watch it at any time and for free. I'm going to start off today by reading an article by chemist, author, and blogger Kevin Ryan. And the article's called 20 Years Later, Facts About the Oklahoma City Bombing That Go Unreported, which was posted on April 12, 2015 on his website, digwithin.net. And here goes. Next week will mark the 20th anniversary of the terrorist bombing of the Murrow Federal Building in Oklahoma City, which killed 168 people, including 19 children. The mainstream media will undoubtedly focus its attention on Timothy McVeigh, who was put to death in June of 2001 for his part in the crime. They might also mention Terry Nichols, who was convicted of helping McVeigh plan the bombing and is serving a life sentence without parole. There will be less discussion about how the FBI spent years hunting for a man who witnesses say accompanied McVeigh on the day of the bombing. They called this accomplice John Doe Number 2, and theories about his identity range from an Iraqi named Hussein al-Husani to a German national described below to a neo-Nazi bank robber named Richard Guthrie. And remember that name, it comes up later in the show. So Richard Guthrie. The Justice Department finally gave up its search and said it was all a mistake, that there was never any credible evidence of a John Doe Number 2 being involved. That reversal demonstrates a pattern of cover-up by authorities and limited media coverage in the years since the crime. This week, accounts will not repeat any reports of secondary devices in the building or reports of the involvement of unknown Middle Eastern characters. There will also be little, if any, mention of the extensive independent investigation into the crime that was conducted by leading members of the Oklahoma City community. Here are seven more facts that will probably not see much coverage on the 20th anniversary. And before getting to those seven facts, I just wanted to state that there are many eyewitnesses to the Oklahoma City bombing that said that there were secondary explosions and other bombs were found within the building. And there are experts who say that the bomb in the Ryder truck could not have been responsible for the size of the explosion in the building. see any similarities to 9/11, like the unacknowledged explosions, ignoring eyewitnesses to the secondary explosions, and there's more. But now back to the article written by Kevin Ryan and the 7 points, which you're not going to see much coverage about in the media on this 20th anniversary. Number one, attorney Jesse Trentadue began investigating the case after his brother Kenny was killed in prison, apparently having been tortured to death by the FBI in its search for John Doe number two. Trentadue's investigation led to a federal judge nearly finding the FBI in contempt of court for tampering with a key witness. Trentadue now says, quote, "There's no doubt in my mind, and it's proven beyond any doubt, that the FBI knew that the bombing was going to take place months before it happened, and they didn't stop it." Number two, Judge Clark Wadoops, who presided over the case brought by Jesse Trentadue, ruled in 2010 that CIA documents associated with the case must be held secret. These documents show that the CIA was involved in the Oklahoma City bombing investigation and the prosecution of McVeigh. This means that foreign parties were involved because the CIA is prohibited from interfering in purely domestic investigations. Number three, Andreas Strassmeier, a former German military officer, was suspected of being John Doe number two. Strassmeier became close friends with McVeigh, and they were both associated with a neo-Nazi organization located in Elohim City, Oklahoma. A retired U.S. intelligence official claimed that Strassmeier was working for the German government and the FBI while at Elohim City. Mainstream reports about the Oklahoma City bombing typically avoid reference to Strassmeier. Fact number four, Larry Potts was the FBI supervisor who was responsible for the tragedies at Ruby Ridge in 1992 and in Waco in 1993. Potts was then given responsibility for investigating the Oklahoma City bombing. Terry Nichols claimed that McVeigh, who allegedly had been recruited as an undercover intelligence asset while in the Army, had been working under the supervision of Potts. Fact number five, Terry Yeakey, an officer of the Oklahoma City Police Department, was among the first to reach the scene, and he was heralded as a hero for rescuing many victims. Yeakey was also an eyewitness to conversations and physical evidence that convinced him that there was a cover-up of the bombing by federal agents. Yeakey was committed to getting to the truth about what happened, but a year after the bombing, he was found dead off the side of a rural road. His death was filed a suicide, despite overwhelming evidence that he was murdered. Authorities reported that Yeakey slit his wrists and neck, then miraculously climbed over a barbed wire fence, walked over a mile's distance through a nearby field, and eventually shot himself in the side of the head at an unusual angle. No weapon was found, no investigation was conducted, no fingerprints were taken, and no interviews were conducted. His family continues to fight for the truth about his death. Number six, Gene Corley, the engineer who was hired by the government to support his claims about the structural fire at the Branch Davidian complex in Waco, was brought in to investigate the destruction of the Murrow Building. Corley brought along three other engineers, Charles Thornton, Meet Sozin, and Paul Malachar. Their investigation was conducted from half a block away where they could not observe any of the damage directly, yet their conclusions supported the pre-existing official account. A few years later, within 72 hours of the 9/11 attacks, these same four men were on the site leading the investigation at the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. Fact number seven, there are many other links between Oklahoma City and 9/11. For example, the alleged hijackers visited the Oklahoma City area many times and even stayed at the same hotel that was frequented by McVeigh and Nichols. After both the Oklahoma City bombing and 9/11, building monitoring hotel videos went missing. FBI harassment of witnesses was seen, and officials ignored evidence that did not support the political story. Additionally, numerous oddities link the Oklahoma City area to Al-Qaeda. In 2002, Oklahoma City resident Nick Berg was interrogated by the FBI for lending his laptop and internet password to alleged 20th hijacker Zacharias Moussaoui. 2 years after his interrogation, Berg became world famous as a victim of beheading in Iraq. Investigators looking for clues about these connections will be particularly interested in two airports, the president of the University of Oklahoma, and the CIA leader who both monitored the alleged hijackers in Germany and was hired at the university just before 9/11. On April 19, 2015, at the 20th anniversary of one of the worst terrorist attacks in history, citizens should be reminded that we don't know what happened that day. We don't know because officials have covered up the crime for unknown reasons, and most media sources will not challenge that cover-up. And I want to encourage people to go to Kevin Ryan's website, Dig Within, and read this article for yourself if you would like more information, because he's got a lot of links there embedded within the article to take you to sites that explore the issues and those seven facts in more detail. And now you're going to hear parts of an audio clip from a 2011 Alex Jones interview with attorney Jesse Trentadieu. You can hear the full interview by going to YouTube and searching for Alex Jones and Oklahoma City. So let's begin with attorney Jesse Trentadieu discussing how he got involved in investigating the Oklahoma City bombings.
And it started with the murder of my brother. My brother was picked up for a so-called parole violation in Southern California, sent immediately to Oklahoma City. 2 days later, the federal government said he committed suicide and they tried to have his body cremated. We fought very hard to get his body returned to us. His throat was cut. They said he'd hanged himself. His throat was cut. His head was smashed open to three places. He'd been beaten head to toe, front to back. Even the soles of his feet had been beaten. We never had a motive for why they killed him. And then shortly before he was executed, I get a message from Tim McVeigh that said, when I saw your brother's picture and heard what happened to him, I wanted you to know that he was killed by the FBI. They mistook him for Richard Lee Guthrie. And Guthrie was the person I believe is John Doe 2. Guthrie, about a year after my brother's murder, ended up supposedly hanging himself while in the custody of the FBI. And we had a witness to my brother's murder, and a month before we went to trial, they found him hanging in his cell while under federal custody. But to cut to the core of it, that apparently my brother matched Richard Lee Guthrie in the description that the FBI was circulating for John Doe 2. It was a white male, 5'9", powerful upper body build, dark complected, believed to be in Canada or Mexico, driving 1986 Chevrolet pickup truck and a dragon tattoo on his left forearm. That was a perfect match for my brother. He was coming back across the border in San Diego, been down into Mexico. He was driving his friend's 1986 Chevrolet pickup truck. He was 5'9", powerful upper body build, dark complected, dragon tattoo, left forearm. Stopped, arrested, sent to Oklahoma and dead 2 days later. Once I knew that, I started to try to find some link between Guthrie, who was even looked like my brother, and the Oklahoma City bombing. And I didn't start out to solve the Oklahoma City bombing. I started out to find out who killed my brother and why. But everything I did took me to Oklahoma City and the bombing. Well, I started to sue the government under the Federal Freedom of Information Act to get records. And among the first records I got were a series of teletypes from FBI Director Louis Free to FBI offices in Oklahoma and around certain locations around the country, talking about McVeigh had called Ellicott City 2 days before the bombing and had asked for more help. And an informant had intercepted that call and advised the FBI. I had documents that showed that a government informant had actually gone to Oklahoma City with McVeigh and scouted the target 4 months before the bombing. And I sued for records involving the CIA. And the CIA shouldn't be involved in the Oklahoma City bombing case because it is a foreign intelligence service, and it's illegal for it to be operating in the United States. And for the first time, they came back, and the CIA claimed national security. They said it would be a grave threat to the national security of the United States if they released the records. And that's one of the exemptions the government has, that they don't have to turn over anything, is if it would jeopardize national security. But I'm thinking, what in the world is the CIA doing looking at this white supremacist camp in Oklahoma City?
And this next clip is attorney Jesse Trentadue's response to Alex Jones's question about what he thinks really happened based on all the evidence he's uncovered.
I think it's now apparent that it was some kind of government operation. Whether McVeigh was actually working for the government originally and then went rogue on him, or whether it was planned all along, I don't know. But the FBI had at least four or five informants involved with this operation. They knew in advance it was going to happen. And once it happened, they did everything in the world they could to cover it up. I sued to get the surveillance tapes around on the Murrow building. The surveillance cameras actually on a building that was destroyed, and the surveillance cameras tapes on the roads leading up to the building. I get all the tapes except the one for the Murrow building. But the tapes they give me go blank at various times between 8:54 and 9:02 when the bomb went off. So I have six or seven different buildings where when a vehicle would be passing, specifically the bomb truck and with the Ryder truck, the tape goes blank. And you know, further up the road, a little later, that tape goes blank. So in essence, 26 tapes that I received go blank at various times between 8:54 and 9:02 on April 19, 1995. And the government of the United States says, well, that's because the tapes were being changed.
What he means here is that the government claims that the tapes at these various locations were all being changed to new tapes all at the same time that morning, conveniently, when the truck with the bomb was driving by.
That's basically what they said. But more importantly, they don't give me the tapes from the Murrow building. And I had been leaked the Secret Service timeline that said surveillance cameras show the bomb detonating 3 minutes and 6 seconds after the suspect exited the vehicle. Now, that was the Murrow building camera tapes. I've sued to get those. No one has ever seen those outside of the FBI, to my knowledge.
And an FBI agent told the Washington Times and LA Times he's seen them, and it shows McVeigh with other people.
Yes, and the government, the FBI specifically says they can't find. Now, the most important evidence, you would think, that would have been Exhibit 1 in the prosecution of Tim McVeigh, a tape showing him driving the truck up to the building, setting the timer, getting out of the truck, walking away, and the bomb going off. They didn't use that tape. And the reason they didn't use it is because it has other people getting out of that truck, one or more of whom was probably an informant.
The Alex Jones interview with Jesse Trentadue is in four parts on YouTube. What you just heard is the tip of the iceberg. So if you want to learn more about what really happened at Oklahoma City, you can continue your research there. And again, once you're on YouTube, search for Alex Jones and Oklahoma City. And now you're going to hear parts of an interview with Alex Jones and the two producers of the film A Noble Lie, which I mentioned earlier. So here's James Lane and Holland Vanden Neuwenhoff discussing the evidence from their film.
Well, what we can demonstrate is that the Ryder truck bomb, for one, was not the sole cause of destruction to the Murrow building. That there were other people also involved who assisted McVeigh, and these people were ignored by the U.S. government. That some of these people were U.S. government informants. We have the paper and named them by name. We named some of the agents involved. We named some of the government figures involved. Terry Nichols, in prison, gave an affidavit. And he has nothing to gain by lying about his role. He is suffering under two life sentences. He's never leaving jail. He named Larry Potts. Tim McVeigh had told him that Larry Potts, assistant director of the FBI, was in charge of the operation that culminated in the Oklahoma City bombing. Louis Free, head of the FBI, is now retired and now in charge of the Penn State investigation, the child abuse scandal going on there, so we can be assured that truth and justice will not be achieved in that matter, as it was not achieved in Oklahoma City. The victims here, we were lied to about every aspect of the bombing, top to bottom. What is amazing is that they were able to get away with it, and that the mainstream media did not cover all of these points in a cohesive package. The American people can see it and say that this is a lie, and why is it happening? This can all be erased, all our doubts erased by releasing the security videotapes that surround the Murrow building that showed exactly what happened, who drove that truck, what exactly happened at the building. 16 years later, they say they don't have them, or they're lost, or that the tapes they have released, they're all having their tapes changed at the same time, 9:02 a.m., which is ridiculous. The official story and its excuses are very implausible. And once the American people see this, they'll come to understand the true nature of terrorism and question everything that their government says from now on.
Absolutely. And then they say that the primary explosive was ammonium nitrate and fuel oil that was in the Ryder truck that day. We've got eyewitness testimony from the survivors of that building. I mean, who are you going to believe? The people that were actually there or the people that are trying to push the official story? They said that the building was coming down 8 to 10 seconds before the truck bomb went off. They thought it was an earthquake. They had enough time to get under their desk before the glass blew in. According to the FEMA report, that blast wave from the truck was moving at 1,300 feet per second. The story just doesn't hold water, according to the people that were actually there. When you add that with the fact that we've got Brigadier General Parton, who does an analysis of the bombing showing where the additional ordnance would have been placed. You've got Dr. Samuel Cohen, the inventor of the neutron bomb, saying that it would be against the laws of physics, no matter how much ammonium nitrate and fuel oil was used, to bring that building down. We've got a report from Eglin Air Force Base where they constructed a single larger explosive, set it off next to a weaker structure, and it did less damage. It was their conclusion that there had to be additional ordnance inside the building. We've got Officer Terrence Shakey, real hero that day, saved 8 people's lives, but he was on the scene within minutes. One of the hallmarks of an ammonium nitrate and fuel oil bomb is a nitric gas cloud. The first 26 responders were hospitalized from the inhalation of nitric gas. That did not happen, and Terry Yakey saving people from the building that day within minutes proves that there was no nitric gas cloud.
And speaking next is Alex Jones.
All right, I want to add a key piece of evidence here. Not one, not two, but 3 different high-level FBI agents, including Larry Potts, the deputy director, head of counterterrorism, said he was in Dallas, took a Southwest Airlines flight. Even mainstream media said there were no flights going in that day at that time. Then he said, oh, I drove. Hotel receipts of him the day before, which people knew to look into because he'd been seen. So right there, we know they're on the ground. It fits into what McVeigh and others had said. They needed to go after the states' rights movement that was centered around Oklahoma. They needed to demonize the growing militia movement. They needed to kind of cover up what had happened at Waco with the FLIR footage and the killing there that was coming out in Congress right at that time. Bill Clinton told USA Today on Air Force One right after being elected, he said, I owe my reelection to Oklahoma City. And to Eric Holder, who was involved in the cover-up, we've got his emails, thanks to the lawsuits with Jesse Trinidad and others, getting the information through FOIA. But we have Holder running a false flag with tens of thousands of guns into Mexico and drugs back into the U.S. That's now all confirmed. We knew it back in January of this year. I mean, this is big medicine. This is big news. And then the memos, ABC, CBS got them, where they said, we're going to do this to blame the Second Amendment. There's a false flag confirmed.
Exactly. Operation Fast and Furious is making the headlines right now, where it shows that the ATF is documented, along with the FBI, was shipping guns to Mexico. That has killed thousands of people. And Eric Holder, the Attorney General of the United States, responsible for enforcing the laws of the land back in 1995, he was in charge of the FBI investigation, the Department of Justice investigation, into the Oklahoma City bombing, and in charge of the cover-up of the murder of Kenneth Trentadue in federal custody. We have his emails where he talks about the Trentadues and Trentadon'ts on how to cover up the story, and the Trentadue story led directly to Oklahoma City. So what you have in the headlines now is Holder implicated right now in a false flag operation that has killed thousands of people. So we have him implicated in what is now being reported in the mainstream media as legitimately a false flag operation. Holder, back in 1995, was in charge of another false flag operation, the Oklahoma City bombing. This is why this movie is so timely. We're showing that it's a continual pattern, and if these people are not held accountable for their crimes, they rise up in power and they commit even greater crimes. And what we can conclusively prove with this movie, at the very least, is that the official story is a lie.
What this movie does is it shows the methodology of state-sponsored terror. At the time of the Oklahoma City bombing, there was a patriot movement in this country. People were talking about a restoration of the Constitution, the expansion of the police state powers. They were resisting the anti-terrorism legislation that was trying to be passed. After the Oklahoma City bombing, it completely silenced anybody that opposed the globalization agenda. And then about the time the patriot movement started to get renewed, we had 9/11. Oklahoma City was a precursor to 9/11. I mean, after the event, the Patriot Act passed. Everybody was begging to have their freedoms taken away. Prior to 9/11, they never would have accepted it. And now we have a new patriot movement moving in this country, and exposing these events is going to take away their false flag power.
Some of these facts are just so amazing that they would even pass the plausibility test in a fiction story. We have the brother of the Oklahoma governor at the time of the bombing, Frank Keating, his brother Martin Keating, who is a self-admitted insider in military intelligence, writes a book called Final Jihad. According to the publisher, this book was written in 1992. This is about the time, mind you, that McVeigh was being recruited for secret government activities out of the Army, according to his own admission. Martin Keating writes a book called Final Jihad, which features a character named Ted McVeigh, who tries to bomb a federal building in Oklahoma City, a plot that is foiled by a state trooper. Now we take that fiction, that so-called fiction, we look at the reality that was presented to us the day of the bombing, is that McVeigh gets arrested after the bombing in Oklahoma by a state trooper. Now, this obviously is not a coincidence, and then no one can defend that. Obviously, there was inside knowledge on the part of the governor's office.
And again, you were just listening to part of an interview with Alex Jones and James Lane and Holland van den Nieuwenhoff discussing the evidence presented in their film, A Noble Lie, which is now posted on YouTube. It's 2 hours long. And I'm going to end the show today with the audio from a video put together by James Corbett of thecorbettreport.com. It's been slightly edited to allow for the difference between video and audio. When you hear it, you may remember the five-minute video he did about 9/11 a few years back. There are many similarities between the two events. So here it is, everything you need to know about the Oklahoma City bombing by James Corbett.
On the morning of April 19, 1995, a decorated Gulf War combat vet blew up the federal building in Oklahoma City using a truck bomb that he didn't build and a Ryder truck that he didn't rent with the help of a passenger who didn't exist. Having just gotten away with the largest act of terrorism on U.S. soil to date, the Fort Bragg-trained Special Forces Sheep Drip dropout blended in with the crowd by making his getaway in a car without a license plate and was immediately pulled over. The ATF was the supposed target of the attack, but luckily all of their agents were out of the office that morning. Later that day, the president boldly declared,
"We will find the people who did this."
And
when we do, justice will be swift, certain, and severe.
Except for
John Doe number two.
John Doe number two.
John Doe number two.
Who, according to the FBI, never existed. In McVeigh's unprecedented 3.5-week trial, the prosecution didn't show the CCTV footage of him and John Doe number two parking the Ryder truck. Didn't explain why 24 separate witnesses mass hallucinated the existence of John Doe number two. Didn't explain why the government was testing truck bombs and the army was storing Ryder trucks at Camp Gruber right before the bombing, and didn't talk to the FBI informants who blew the whistle on the plot. But they did collaborate with the CIA, and they did convict McVeigh as the lone wolf bomber and Terry Nichols as his bomb-constructing accomplice. Still, a bunch of crazy conspiracy theorists, including 300 bombing victims, insist on talking about facts and evidence and refuse to simply believe what they've been told a million times by people in tailored suits with well-coiffed hair. They quote the U.S. Army Brigadier General and the FBI crime lab whistleblower and the inventor of the neutron bomb who point out the physical impossibility that the Ryder truck bomb did the damage to the building, but that doesn't matter because if there were other bombs in the building that day, we would have heard about them.
The second explosive was found and defused.
I think he said another bomb.
The Justice Department is reporting that a second explosive device has been found.
They then found a third device, which was also larger than the first.
And I see another bomb truck going, so apparently they're going to try to get out that third bomb.
The FBI claims to have lost the footage showing McVeigh and John Doe number two parking the truck in front of the Murrah building that morning, but that's understandable because the Bureau has a lot of important evidence to store. Terry Nichols insists the FBI was involved in the plot, but thankfully a judge has saved us the trouble of listening to him by preventing lawyers from deposing him. There was a bomb squad truck parked across the street 2 hours before the blast, but that just shows the authorities were prepared for anything. And
other documents obtained by 2020 show that someone called the executive secretariat's office at the Justice Department in Washington and said the Morrow building had been bombed. But this was 24 minutes before the blast.
But that just shows the public was unusually vigilant that morning. Also,
apparently, before the bombing, Governor Frank Keating's brother, Mark, had been working on a novel about a terrorist bombing in Oklahoma City. Stranger still, one of the characters in the novel was named Thomas McVeigh.
But that's probably just a coincidence. McVeigh wrote a letter to his sister where he admitted to being a secret special forces operative and he complained to friends of the pain in his from an army implanted microchip, but that's crazy because if he didn't actually leave the army in 1991, there would be proof of that. McVeigh was not executed on May 16, 2001 as scheduled because
the FBI had failed to turn over thousands of pages of evidence to McVeigh's defense attorneys.
But the execution went ahead on June 11th. In a highly unusual and secret agreement, no autopsy was performed, one witness said he was still breathing, and the prison officials admitted his hearse was a decoy. Then, the case was officially closed. And if you question any part of this story, you are a paranoid wingnut birther truther tenther prepper conspiracy loon who should feel guilty for having been born. If you love baseball, fluffy kittens, hot dogs, Barbie, Star Wars, and freedom, you will never ever bring up any of these points ever again. ever. This message has been brought to you by the friends of the FBI, ATF, DOJ, CIA, SPLC, MSM, and the U.S. Army. And remember, ignorance is strength.
This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.